another modality of imaging known as electron microscopy that is commonly used to obtain images of what is referred to as the ultrastructure of biological samples. In electron microscopy, instead of light, you make use of accelerated electrons that behave like electromagnetic waves. So there's an electron beam that is accelerated. The wavelength lambda of the equivalent electromagnetic wave is given by lambda equal to h over mv, where h is Planck's constant, m is the mass of the electron, and v is the velocity. So by increasing the velocity, which can be increased by applying a larger accelerating voltage to the electron beam, you can make the wavelength smaller. So it turns out to be lambda equal to 1.23 divided by square root of v, where v is the accelerating voltage. So the higher the voltage, the lower the wavelength of the equivalent electromagnetic wave. So at 60 kilovolts, an electron beam has an effective wavelength of about 0.005 nanometers, and then a resolving power limit of about 0.003 nanometers. So that is the effective resolution you can achieve with 60 kilovolts of acceleration. You can go to higher levels by increasing the acceleration, and you can reduce this limit. So you can go down to a fraction of a nanometer of detail resolution in electron microscopy. There's a price to pay, as you will see. So a low kilovoltage provides high contrast, because low kilovoltage electrons or photons will be absorbed by tissue samples, parts of tissue samples, and then that leads to good contrast, but then you get lower resolution. By increasing the kilovoltage, which is the accelerating voltage, you get better resolution because the wavelength becomes smaller, but then the contrast will be low because the penetrating power increases. The electrons will fly through samples unaffected or not attenuated. To be attenuated, the electron beam or parts of the electron beam, the photons, must be absorbed or stopped by parts of the tissue sample. So there is a trade-off here. Do you want contrast or do you want penetrating power or resolution? So a high kilovoltage beam causes less damage to the specimen. Here is the price you have to pay. When photons are absorbed by a sample, there is local heating. The energy is absorbed, so the sample will be affected. The tissue sample that you put in the electron microscope will be affected by the absorption of the photon energy. The faster electrons with a high kilovoltage beam will pass through a specimen in less time, and fewer of them will be absorbed, so there is less damage to the tissue. But then you get poorer contrast. Electron microscopes can provide magnification of the order of 1 million, 10 to the power of 6. And you can observe what is referred to as the ultrastructure, because you're going down to the level of a few nanometers, or fractions of nanometers, I should say. But electron microscopy requires the sample to be processed in a certain specific way, where it has to be fixed, the biological sample has to be fixed, dehydrated or dried, mounted, and coated with a metal too in most cases, with gold or palladium. So transmission electron microscopy, or TEM, the microscope itself contains these components: a high voltage electron beam generator, a series of electromagnetic lenses to focus the beam, a specimen holding and changing system, and a screen film holder or a detector, a solid state detector, or some kind of an imaging device. And all of these enclosed in high vacuum. So it's a fairly big vacuum chamber. And there is a special system to put your sample and take it out or change it. In transmission electron microscopy, the electron beam passes through the specimen. That's the first word transmission. So you have a specimen, it's not that thick, a very thin specimen. The electron beam will just pass through and will be attenuated just like light. And the resulting image is captured through a screen film combination. In the older systems, there would be a screen which will convert the information, the electron beam information, into a light image, and that light image is captured using film or a digital detector. So the phosphorescent screen is used to obtain the image. So here is an example of collagen fibers in cross-section of a ligament sample from a rabbit. With Dr. Frank in the Department of Surgery, I did some work on the analysis of images of this kind. Suppose this is the ligament. This is from the medial collateral ligament of the knee joint, the ligament that is here from a rabbit. And if this is the long axis of the ligament, you take a section, a transverse section, that's fairly thin. And here we have normal tissue. This is from a normal ligament where the range is about 150 nanometers. The average diameter here is 150 nanometers over a fairly broad range. There are big fibers and small fibers too. In the case of a scar tissue, this is new tissue formed after injury, which was created surgically in the rabbits. The new scar tissue has a narrower range of diameters of the collagen fibers of 60 to 70 nanometers. So each of these circles is about 60 nanometers in diameter. This is with a magnification of 30,000. So by taking images of this kind, we were able to study the nature and properties of the collagen fibers that form in scar tissue, in ligaments, in response to injury, and how they heal over time. So we studied the diameter distribution of these samples over time. And in a later chapter, I have some examples of this, plots of the diameter distribution. But what you can observe directly here is that scar tissue has finer collagen fibers with a smaller diameter of 60 to 70 nanometers, and they're almost uniform, whereas normal ligaments have collagen fiber with an average that is much bigger, about 150 nanometers, and there are very small fibers and also very big fibers. Here's an example of an image of a biopsy sample from a kidney where a needle biopsy is done. A needle is inserted into the kidney and a sample is taken out. And a section of that is shown here. And what is of interest here is this membrane called the glomerular basement membrane. The glomerular basement membrane is affected by diseases. In a disease known as hematuria, where blood leaks into the urine, the GBM, as it is called, is thinner than normal and allows the passage of blood. The normal thickness is about 300 nanometers. When I say that is the value, the range, there is a certain range, could be between 100 and 400 nanometers. In hematuria, it is thinner, less than 200 nanometers. And in case of diabetic nephropathy, it is thicker to about 700-800 nanometers. In normal cases, the thickness is fairly uniform all the way around the capillary. Whereas in an abnormal situation, the membrane thickness is non-uniform. Here it is thicker than normal, and here there is a variation in the thickness, which is also abnormal. One of my MSc students recently developed a method to detect this part, segment the membrane, and analyze the thickness of the membrane. That was done just 2 months ago. A slightly different version of electron microscopy is known as scanning electron microscopy, or SEM, So this is also electron microscopy, where you use an electron beam not to pass through the sample, but with a fairly thick sample, you scan the surface in some sort of a scanning order, could be a raster scan. So using an electron beam that is focused to a diameter of the order of 2 nanometers, you scan the specimen and obtain the information as an image, and there could be some depth information also obtained. What is done is the electron beam impinges the sample, and then there are different ways of measuring what happens after. The secondary electrons that are emitted from the surface of the sample, the main electron beam gets modified and secondary electron beams are emitted, and these are detected and amplified through a photomultiplier tube or a PMT. And then these are displayed as an image on a CRT or a cathode ray tube monitor or some image display device. Now there are different possibilities within the scanning electron microscope to detect a variety of signals that will be emitted from the surface. And you get different images. And you can also get some depth information of the order of a few millimeters. So the sample used in scanning electron microscopy could be a few millimeters thick, whereas for transmission, it has to be much thinner. So here's an example using ligaments again, but using scanning electron microscopy, where you see not the cross-section. The previous image I showed was a sectional image of the fibers. Now you see the fibers along the long axis of the ligament. In a normal ligament, the collagen fibers are arranged like the strands in a rope. They are bunched together and they are parallel with the long axis, but there could be a little bit of twisting as you go along the axis of the rope. So in a ligament also, the same thing happens. But if you take a small part of a ligament and investigate the collagen fibers, they'll be aligned mutually parallel to the axis of the ligament. And that is what you see here in a normal ligament sample. Almost all of the fibers are arranged vertically. So there could be some moving around, some scattered here and there. Whereas in a scar tissue, this is scar tissue, I don't have the age of that in weeks, but it's scar tissue. The magnification is 4,000 now, whereas the other was 30,000. Here you don't see that alignment. And the scar tissue does not have the same properties. It cannot bear the tensile load, and it could break again if load is applied. So while the ligament is healing, you cannot apply any load to the ligament. It cannot take the load the same way as the organized collagen fibers. So with Dr. Frank and others, we did quite a lot of work on image processing of samples like this, where we applied directional filtering techniques to decompose images of like this in terms of angle, and we obtained the angular distribution of collagen-covered area. So here there is disorganization, and here there is organization. And during the course of healing of the ligament, there is a regaining of the organization from disorganized tissue towards organized tissue. The organization being fibers aligned with the long axis, mutually parallel. Details of this are in chapter 8. We will not be going that far in this course. Okay, let's now take up X-ray imaging in some detail. X-ray imaging perhaps is the most commonly used modality of medical imaging. There are several variations within X-ray imaging. We will consider planar or X-ray imaging in some detail. In regular radiography, a two-dimensional projection or shadow is obtained. By irradiating the three-dimensional body with X-rays, with a beam of X-rays. So the X-ray photons pass through the body and are selectively or preferentially attenuated and absorbed. So each ray of X-ray photons is attenuated by a factor that depends upon the integral of the linear attenuation coefficient of X-rays of the tissue along the path. So there is a certain path that the beam will take, and depending upon what kind of tissue the beam will encounter in passing through the body along that particular path, there is a certain amount of attenuation. So let me go here to this image, and I'll come back to the description in a little while. So here is a three-dimensional body, a cube, and we have X-ray photons coming in, and let's assume that these rays are mutually parallel. So if the X-ray tube is far away from you, you could assume that the rays are mutually parallel, and then as the rays pass through the body, they are attenuated in a certain manner. Each ray is attenuated by the integral of the attenuation coefficient along that particular path. If this body is homogeneous, then you just have a multiplication factor that is the length of the beam. But of course, if it is homogeneous, there is no need to take an image. There is no structure to be investigated. You could still obtain certain properties. You can measure certain properties of the sample by using X-rays. But you would want an image when there is some inhomogeneity within the object. Otherwise, it will be just a constant image. So suppose you consider this beam or this ray AB that is passing through the body. And let us consider a certain number of photons, NI, in a certain counting interval of a few milliseconds. And suppose in the same interval, the number of photons coming outside is NO. So this ray, AB, will pass through the body and hit the detector, let's say the film, at that point, B. And it will cause a certain effect on the film at that point. And when all of these rays come and hit the film, then you have a certain picture that is formed. And because you're using a film here, and this body is three-dimensional, and the film is a two-dimensional plane, what we get is an integral of this object. Let us call this object as fxyz. I say z, some of you may say z. I hope that's okay. And because we're assuming the X-rays are going in this direction, which is parallel to the x-axis, this will be the yz plane. So the image is f of yz, this object is fxyz. The law that governs the attenuation of X-rays is known as Beer's law or Beer-Lambert law, and you must have seen this in physics, some basic physics courses. So I described this already. Let us consider the plane PQRS within the body that I showed, and use the coordinate system TS or ST at an angle theta with respect to the XY coordinates, and S equal to minus X sine theta plus Y cos theta. That is simply the rotated coordinate system, and this is the plane that we are talking about, the PQRS plane. Here the PQRS plane is parallel to the X-axis, but in general it could be rotated, and we need that only to indicate an equation for the line AB. So the number of photons NO coming out of the body along that ray A is the number of photons coming in, NI, times this attenuation factor, exponential of minus the integral along the ray AB, mu XY. And here we are in the XY plane. But in general, you could write this as mu XYZ if you want. But let's consider one plane here, and ds is the elemental distance along that ray. So you can change this, divide on the other side and take the log, and you get the integral of mu xy ds equal to the log of ni over n naught. Ln is natural log. So here we are assuming that mu xy is independent of the frequency or wavelength of the X-rays. In general, the attenuation coefficient mu xy is a property of the tissue or the object that is being imaged. It depends upon the density of the object, and it also depends upon the photon energy used or the wavelength of the X-rays used. And I and N naught are Poisson variables. They are random variables because the detection, the passage, and the attenuation of an X-ray photon is a random event. So these are random variables. Mu xy is called the linear attenuation coefficient at a particular position in the body. Now here we are considering one plane, so I'll call it xy, but for the whole body you could write it as mu xyz. So it depends upon the density of the object and the frequency or wavelength or energy of the radiation used. So what you measure will be N naught, which is the energy at the other side of the body on the detector side, and for reference you need Ni if you want to make an objective measurement. If you just want a picture, you put a piece of film and you record. You will not get an objective or quantitative measurement without the reference. So this gives us the integral of mu xy. So what you're measuring is this. Let's go back here. The effect on the film here, the blackening of the film at this point, depends upon the integral of mu xy along that path through the body. So each point in the film just gives an integral of mu xy over a certain path of the X-ray photons through the body. The internal details are all superimposed. They are compressed or integrated onto a single point or a single measurement if you use a detector there. So this is a two-dimensional planar image of the three-dimensional object. So when I stand next to the wall and there is a film there and X-rays come, and typically it's from the back to the front, what is called posterior anterior PA view of the planar X-ray image, what you get is an integral of this body onto a sheet of film. And when you integrate, of course, you're losing information because details that are aligned along one ray will be compressed. So if we were to consider one particular arrangement of the axes, if theta equal to 90 degrees and s equal to minus x and ds is minus dx, then the observed image is a function of y and z. Gyz is integral minus mu xyz. So the three-dimensional image is integrated and reduced to a two-dimensional planar image in this case. Now there are possibilities where by obtaining multiple such projections for various angles around the body, you can use the information and reconstruct the entire body in three dimensions using techniques of reconstruction from projection. Now that is known as computed tomography, and we will not get into that topic. That is in chapter 9, I believe. So if you're interested, you could read that part later on. Now to acquire the image, you could use different types of detectors. You could use solid state detectors, but the traditional detector has been the screen film detector. And even today, in many places, the screen film detector is used in, for example, mammography, where the resolution of the digital detectors is not adequate yet. Whereas for chest imaging and imaging of extremities, such as the hands and legs, there, the digital systems have been accepted. So in traditional X-ray imaging using film, the X-rays that come out of the body strike a fluorescent or phosphor screen made up of compounds of rare earth elements such as lanthanum oxybromide or gadolinium oxysulfide. These fluoresce when impinged upon by X-ray photons. So the X-ray photons are converted to visible light photons. So the screen part, which is only the screen, is what the X-ray photons will strike after exiting from the body. And when a photon of X-rays strikes the screen, the compound at that point will convert the X-ray photons to light photons and will emit a little amount of light. So the light-sensitive film in contact with the screen will then get an image. So the film that is used in X-ray imaging is not sensitive to X-rays, but to light. So you need a screen to convert X-rays to light, and there is a certain amount of loss of quality or degradation of the image quality here, which is important to recognize. And that's the reason I'm spending some time on this. The film contains a layer of silver halide emulsion, and the thickness is of the order of 10 micrometers. And the exposure of or blackening of the film depends upon the number of light photons that is obtained by the screen or created by the screen in response to the amount of X-ray photons hitting that spot on the screen. Now, there are some important issues here. A thick screen will provide high efficiency because you have more of the lights, the X-ray sensitive material that will absorb the X-ray photons and give light. And the film will be sensitive to that light that is emitted. So suppose this is the screen, and I'm showing it quite thick, and this is the film. The X-rays are coming from the top after passing through the body. So if you have a thick screen, you have more of the rare earth material that will absorb the X-ray photons and convert them to light. Of course, many photons of X-rays will just go through undetected. The thicker the screen, the more the detection efficiency. The thinner the screen, the less the detection efficiency. More X-ray photons will simply fly through, not absorbed at all. The patient has suffered the exposure because the X-ray photons went through the patient, but then you're not detecting, so it's a waste. So you need a thick screen, but a thick screen will create a problem. The typical thickness of the phospholayer is 40 to 100 micrometers. This thickness is about 40 to 100 micrometers. But if you have a thick screen, and suppose a photon of X-rays is stopped there, the amount of light that is created there will spread before hitting the film. So there is a point in the detector, in the screen, a certain amount of X-ray photons will be absorbed, and light is created, and light, when it comes through, before hitting the film, it'll spread. And that spread will cause blurring because one point from the X-ray photons here, if that is the theoretical size of the ray, will make an effect on the film, will make a blob on the film that is that big. Whereas if the screen is very thin, let us say only up to that much, if an X-ray photon there is stopped and gives light, the amount of spread from there onto the film is only so much. So a thin screen will cause less blurring like this. A thick screen will cause more blurring. A thick screen is more efficient because it absorbs more X-ray photons and creates more light and a better image. But it'll be blurred. So there is a trade-off. In a fluoroscopy system, there is an image intensifier and a video camera. The X-ray photons will be converted using a coating on a tube, on a video tube, and then images are acquired at 2 to 8 frames per second. And the X-ray beam is pulsed 30 to 100 milliseconds per frame, so the X-ray beam is not on all the time. So here you get a movie at a certain frame rate, not at 30 frames per second, but a lower frame rate. So you can obtain an X-ray movie by using a video tube to capture the X-ray beam after it has passed through the patient or the object. So the screen coating then is on the video tube. What you have in the screen is that material is coated on the video tube, and then that information is read within the video tube in the form of a video signal. So that is fluoroscopy, or video fluoroscopy. In computed radiography, or CR as it is called nowadays, a photostimulable phosphor plate is used, like the charge plate used in a photocopier machine. And this is made of europium activated barium fluorohalide, that is the coating there. And this is used instead of film to capture and temporarily hold a charge pattern. The latent image is scanned using a laser beam and then digitized. So this CR plate, it's called computed radiography, but really there is no computation. That name is a bit of a wrong terminology, but that is how it is called commercially, and it's been accepted in radiology as CR. The only computation done there is when a laser beam is used to scan the plate, that value is digitized. That's the only computation. So this name is not correct, but that's the way it is called. So you have a charge plate, or you have a plate made of this material, and that is exposed to the X-ray beam after passage through the body, and there are pockets of charge created in this plate or on this plate in response to the number of photons in each area, elemental area. And that information is scanned by using a laser beam, and the laser beam will convert that information into an image. So the advantage of this system is the same system as the traditional X-ray system is used. Instead of putting a film, screen film cassette, the computed radiography plate is put there, and then after exposure the plate is taken, and instead of developing film using chemicals, this plate is scanned using a laser beam, and then the same plate is used again. That's the advantage. The same machines, X-ray machines as used previously, can be used in exactly the same situation. And that is the reason why computed radiography has become popular now, because there is no change to the remaining infrastructure of the X-ray imaging system. In digital radiography, called DR, now computed radiography is also digital. Once you scan the image is digital. Before scanning, it is not digital. But in what is called digital radiography, or DR, the film and the entire screen film combination is taken away and then replaced with solid state electronic detectors that are directly sensitive to X-rays. Now there are some systems where there is still a screen that converts the X-ray photons to light photons, and then you have a detector, a solid state detector that is sensitive to light. There are some other systems where the X-ray beam will go directly onto the solid state detector, which is sensitive to X-rays. So there are two types of digital radiography systems. So here, there is no scanning of any latent image. The detector will have elements that will directly give you the image, much like the CCD array or detector array in your camera. Instead of being sensitive to light, they are sensitive to X-ray photons. So here are some examples of a posterior anterior X-ray image of the chest and the lateral image corresponding to that. We don't have to discuss much about that. That's just an example. There are several physical and technical considerations in X-ray imaging that affect the quality of the image that you obtain. And then the image processing algorithms required subsequently to process the images would have to take into account these considerations. There are issues related to the target in the X-ray tube and the focal spot. Now, if you remember from your high school physics, the X-ray tube that is used to generate X-rays is a vacuum chamber in which you have a cathode that is heated that releases electrons. The electrons are accelerated using electromagnetic coils, and then the high velocity electrons are focused into a fine beam, and they are made to hit a target plate, which is the anode, and the target plate is typically made of tungsten or molybdenum, or a combination. And when the electron beam at high velocity comes and impinges upon or strikes the anode, there'll be X-rays that will be emitted because of the amount of energy that is deposited by the accelerated photon, the electron beam. The X-ray photons will then be passed through the body. There could be a filter to remove low energy X-ray photons, and then the filtered electron beam is used to obtain the image. There is also a lot of heat generated when the electron beam is stopped by the target. Now, the size of the electron beam hitting the target is an important parameter, because that determines the size of what is called the focal spot on the target. And from there, you get the X-rays. The smaller the focal spot, which means the finer the beam of electrons hitting the target, the smaller the focal spot and the better the quality of the image that you get.